What's going on, people? I am Sydney Gant, a.k.a. Sid the Kid, a.k.a. Saggy Bones. And you have just done yourself a favor by tuning in to Break the World. Doing it, people. We made it to the fourth episode. We are an unstoppable force. We made it to the unstoppable fourth episode of Break the World. We're like P. Diddy in the late 90s and the early 2000s. We can't stop and we won't stop. And I want to be very clear about this. Like P. Diddy in the late 90s and the early 2000s. Nothing like P. Diddy now. P. Diddy now is like, my guy, you gotta stop. Diddy, for the love of God, please stop. Why has nobody in Bad Boys tried to stop this man? Bad Boys need somebody like me in their crew, somebody with my level of paranoia and skepticism. You needed somebody to be like, hey, where's all this not stopping taking us, guys? Hey, fellas, I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but I have a question. I guess you can consider it more of a philosophical quandary. And I get it. I totally get it. We can't stop. Nobody's disputing that. We just can't. But if we don't stop, where will we end up? And that question is really for everybody. Anybody can take that. Take that. Unstoppable force. And we just got another review. We are soaring, people. Shout out to Big Ol' Sauce for the review on iTunes. You are the man for that. And I didn't mean to assume your gender, but I guess I just did. I can't help that. I am a pathological gender assumer. I assume that Big Ol' Sauce has a penis. My bad. I do feel like that is the safest assumption, by the way. To assume that there is a penis and be wrong, than to assume that there is no penis and be wrong. Because as far as surprise genitals are concerned, surprise penis has to be the most demoralizing. By far, there is nothing more demoralizing than a surprise penis. Like if you turned a corner and you saw a surprise vagina, you'd be like, huh, I didn't expect to see one of those today. But if you turned a corner and you saw a surprise penis, you'd be like, oh, God, dear, I didn't want to see that. Who put that there? Goodness gracious, man, I was having such a good day. Ugh. Easily the most demoralizing. If you turned a corner and you saw a surprise butthole, that's probably the least demoralizing of all the surprise genitals to see. Because you wouldn't even know right away that it was a butthole. You'd have to figure it out. If you turned a corner and you saw a surprise butthole, you'd be like, wait, is that a... That looks like, I think that's a butthole, isn't it? Actually, as I think about that, I'm not even sure whether or not a butthole is considered part of the genitalia package. I just realized that I don't know what is considered genitalia. I always assumed that it was anything that had to be covered up by undergarments was genitalia. But the more I think about it, are boobs genitalia? I always thought they were. But it seems kind of inappropriate to lump boobs in with genitalia. Just to be on the safe side, I'm going to assume that everything that you need permission to touch is genitalia. Boobs, penis, vagina, butthole, African-American hair. All genitalia. Speaking of which, Big Ol' Sauce made a reference to the flat top, which I'm taking as a compliment. So thank you for that, Big Ol' Sauce. Mentioning the flat top, the box. That made me happy. And it's not that I don't get enough compliments on the box. I get a decent amount of compliments on the box. But not nearly as many compliments as I used to get when I had dreads. Man, when I had dreads, I got compliments on my hair at least every other day. That is not even an exaggeration. At least every other day, somebody was complimenting me on the dreads. The box, I probably get a compliment maybe once every week or week and a half or so. Like once every 11 days, I get a compliment on the box. But I never got any pushback with the dreads. The box does get some resistance. There is some flat top resistance out there in the world, which I don't even understand where that's coming from. I get it. It is a ridiculous haircut, but it is also one of the big three or four haircuts that a black man can have. If you looked into a comic book and you saw a representation of black people, there are only so many haircuts that we have. You have the low cut, which is in some regions called the Caesar. You have dreads. You have the afro, the unruly afro. And you have the box. That's it. I mean, there are some cornrows, don't get me wrong, but I've always considered that a little bit of a feminine hairstyle that some men get. My bad. I can't help the way I think about that. I feel like every man that has cornrows is probably a pervert. I can't help that. You're either a pervert or you hit women. That's it. Cornrows is the domestic abuse haircut. If you have cornrows, your main shirt is a wife beater. For sure. Yeah, but I got some pushback on my flat top very recently at Wawa. It was a compliment and some pushback at the same time. I got a hoagie, and the girl that was making my hoagie as she was giving it to me, she goes, "I like your haircut." And the girl that was behind the deli working next to her, she goes, "Why'd you lie to that nut ass ball?" I mean, she said it as I was walking away. She didn't say it in my face. So kudos to her for that. But she goes, "Why'd you lie to that nut ass ball?" And I could hear the girl that gave me the compliment go, "I do like his haircut." And then the girl was like, "Well, I guess it's okay." She got bullied into finding my haircut okay, which I'm perfectly down with. That's almost a cancellation of the pushback. That's almost two compliments, basically. I'm taking it as two compliments. That's two compliments. Never mind. No flat top resistance. I got two compliments on my hair at Wawa the other day. Really beefing up those compliment numbers on the haircut. I'm not even mad at her for calling me a nut-ass bull for having this haircut. This is a ridiculous haircut to have. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, having a box as a grown man is absolutely absurd, which is why I have it. But shout out to Big Ol' Sauce for the review and the rating on iTunes. Again, really appreciate what I'm taking as a compliment about the hair. And you too can be like Big Ol' Sauce by giving us a rating and a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you're listening to this podcast, but preferably iTunes or Spotify, because I think that's what helps the most. And if you do like Big Ol' Sauce, I will also assume your gender. So I'm feeling really good right now. I just had a really good weekend this past weekend. We had a family fight weekend. On Saturday, my son had a jiu-jitsu tournament in the morning. And then also on Saturday, later on that night, Ansley, my wife, she had a jiu-jitsu super fight at a really cool event and venue. It was awesome. And it felt good because we had victories all around. My son, he ended up winning his bracket of the tournament. And then Ansley, she won her super fight later on that night. And it was pretty cool because it's not always that way. Ansley competes a lot and she doesn't always win, because that's just the name of the game. You win some, you lose some. And sometimes I have to watch my wife get beat up, which is tough. You always hear people say that. You always hear people say that watching their loved one have to go into a fight is way harder than actually having to spectate the fight. And I get it, because there's nothing that I can do to affect the outcome. So if my wife is getting beat up, I just have to sit there and watch her get beat up. And I know it's a sport, but part of me believes that when she walks off of the mat after a loss, she's looking at me like, "You just sat there and didn't do anything? You just sat there and let me get beat up? What kind of man are you?" I actually don't know what's harder, to be the husband of a wife that just got beat up or the wife of a husband that just got beat up. Nah, actually, I know the answer. She handles her losses pretty well, way better than I would be handling the same losses, for sure. Because it is different when you get beat up as a man. When another man beats you up, that man just proved that he could basically have his way with your family. There's nothing you can do to protect your family from that particular man. And that is the insecurity that you have to roll with until you get a chance to beat up another man, or you get a chance to prove yourself against that same man. And even then, if you do go up against that same man and you beat him, you know that half the time he could have your family. I mean, it is true that half the time you could have his family, but it's a coin toss. At that point, you're basically just co-parenting each other's families. So that's an insecurity that would cut deep, and I would have to be working really hard not to take that insecurity out on my family. Because that ride home would be so tense. I would be doing at least 35 miles per hour above every speed limit. Even in residential areas, I am pedal to the metal. After getting beat up in front of my wife, I am pedal to the metal. And I wouldn't even be driving that fast on purpose. My foot would just be heavy with anger. And I don't care how polite she says it. If in any way, shape, or form she suggests that I slow down, I would pop off. Oh, you think because you watch another man beat me up, you can tell me how to drive now? Or you think you can just tell me how to drive now? What else do you think you can tell me how to do now? Oh, you think you bigger than me? You bigger than me? Just let go of the steering wheel. How about you take the steering wheel then? How about you take the steering wheel then? Oh, if you're the man of the house now, why don't you drive? How about you drive now? Yeah, I've never really picked Ansley's brain, though, on what type of social insecurity she's dealing with after getting beat up by a lady. That's got to be tough. It is kind of funny to think about the things that she is trying so hard to not take out on me after getting beat up by a woman. Like, she's probably sitting over there, like, stifling herself from turning to me and going, "So you think she's prettier than me?" Was that sexist? I don't even know. But there's got to be in there. I'm probably right about that. I have to ask. I have to pick her brain about that. So I'm sure, though, it's definitely harder for the wife to deal with the husband after his loss. But, man, watching your wife get beat up, it does suck. Not fun. Wait a second. Let me take a second to really think about this. Because there are probably some guys out there hearing me say that sometimes my wife gets beat up in front of me, and they're thinking to themselves, must be nice. There are probably some guys out there that need to see their wife get beat up every now and again. Just every now and again. Just so they know that it is getting done. Maybe I'm looking at it all wrong. Maybe sometimes getting to see my wife get beat up is actually a privilege. I need to check my privilege. I have fight privilege, and I need to be very responsible with it. I will say this, anytime we're driving home after a loss, I get to pick the music. I get zero complaints about the music I put on. But anyway, Ansley won her match, and it was awesome. It was just really cool to see Ansley in her element, because in that world, in the local jiu-jitsu fight scene, people know her. People look up to her. People are inspired by her, mostly because she's an old woman fighting young ladies. You know, she's in her 40s, and she's out there fighting people in their 20s and 30s. So she's an inspiration, because that's how society works. If you're old and you do anything, people are like, oh my God, how do you do it? How do you do it with three kids and that age you have? So it was awesome, man, because before the match, people were coming up to Ansley wishing her luck and telling her how cool it is to watch her fight, and people were asking to take pictures with her and having their kids take pictures with her. It was cool. She was like a little celebrity in that arena. So it was fun to see her in her element, get all of that adulation beforehand, and then go into the match, get a win, and then get more afterwards. It was just a whole entire fun thing. Man, my son's tournament was crazy. So he won his bracket, but there was only one other kid in his bracket based off of age, belt rank, and weight. He only had one other little kid in his bracket, and it was this little Asian kid, which I'm not just saying that for no reason. That's going to become important later on in the story. So he goes against this kid, and because it's just two of them in the bracket, they have to do a best out of three. So the first match, my son, he goes in there, he gets a win by armbar, and they had this rule for little kids where, if you don't know what an armbar is, it's when you extend the person's arm to the point that you can break it, and they have to tap unless they get their arm broken. But for kids, if one of the kids gets the other kid's arm straight, the ref ends it because they're just trying to keep everything safe for these kids. And that's what happened in the first match. My son got in the armbar position. I wouldn't even call it the most dangerous armbar, but he got in the armbar position. And as per the rules, the ref stopped the match. As soon as that happened, the little Asian boy blew up. I have never seen anything like this. I've seen kids cry after losses, but I have never seen a kid blow up like this kid blew up. He threw the biggest fit you would ever see. Now, here's what's cool about this experience, because going into these matches, the only thing that I'm reiterating to my son is to go in there, work hard, and do his best. And during his wrestling season, anytime he lost a match, he would get really emotional. He would start crying, and you have to go and fight another match. And he would go in and he wouldn't be his best self for his next match after having that emotional release. So I'm constantly harping on him, like, no matter what happens in this match, you got to keep yourself composed, you got to stay ready, and you got to be ready to go into the next match. Because if you get emotional, you might not be able to learn from your mistake. More than likely, you're not going to be able to take lessons from your loss, because all of your energy will be going into dealing with the emotions that you're exhibiting, right? And so, like I said, my son got this armbar on this kid. This kid had this big emotional outburst, and they came into the next match. And the next match was a carbon copy of the match before it. That kid made literally all the same mistakes, and my son got into the exact same submission in the exact same sequence. So now, this time, my son gets the armbar, and it is a more dangerous armbar. My son actually does all the things to put him in a situation where he should probably tap. The ref still ends the match, right? This kid gets up and starts smacking himself in the face. He hits himself with a two-piece from the right, bam, bam. And then he walks in a little circle, still like throwing a fit. And then he hits himself with a pimp smack from the heavens. He reaches his hand up as high as he could reach his hand and comes down. It looked like a WWE wrestling match smack, like when The Rock is like smacking people across the chest, and he came down across his own face. He hit himself so hard that he put a red mark on his face. And after that, he still had to go over to the ref and my son and have my son have his hand raised. They didn't even do that part yet. So he smacked himself in the face three times and then had to go watch another person get his hand raised in victory. It was absolutely insane. Now, here's why I bring up the fact that he was Asian. Because he had Asian parents, right? That's how you make an Asian. You take two Asian parents, you smush them together, and then they make an Asian kid. And they were being shockingly supportive of the kid. And the reason why I say shockingly is because, based off of this kid's outburst, you would think that he had some overbearing Asian parents, the way that he was acting after this. And it came as a surprise too, because during the match, both matches, this kid was cool and calm as a cucumber. And as soon as he got the loss, a switch flipped and this kid lost it. Now, the parents afterwards and after each match, they were just like, it's okay. Like, we told you, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. All you have to do is go out here and do your best. Remember what we always tell you. It doesn't matter. You just got to try. And here's the deal. It made me really think about what's necessary for raising ethnic kids in America. Because it didn't seem like these were overbearing Asian parents. It actually seemed that they were very laid back Asian parents, which I think might be the wrong thing to do. I think, based off of genetic memory, Asian kids need overbearing Asian parents in order to be stable. I know that sounds crazy, but I do think that little Asian kids need overbearing Asian parents to push them hard. Because if they don't have that, they'll try to push themselves. And little kids don't know anything about how to raise another kid. So he's just doing it the best way he knows how by smacking the shit out of himself after a loss. I don't think he would be doing that if he had his Asian parents playing their part. All ethnic kids that are being raised in America, they need a very particular type of ethnic trauma. They need their own specific brand of ethnic trauma in order to be stable and successful and be high achievers in life. That's a fact. It just smooths them out. Like Asian kids, they need to be pushed really hard and have really high expectations weighing on their shoulders at all times. They need that. When you're growing up, the chillest Asians are the ones that kind of rebelled against at least the direction their family was pushing them in. And they found their own direction that they wanted to push themselves in, but they utilized all of the tools that their parents had put on them to pursue what they want. Those are always the chillest and the most fun Asian. They just flip their ethnic trauma. Like Mexicans. The coolest Mexicans are always the ones that have immigrant parents, preferably illegal. They need parents that are constantly looking over their shoulders in order to be stable and successful. I don't know what the magic is, but for some reason, having parents that could be deported at any moment make cool Mexicans. And sometimes it's a little different for the ethnic boys and the ethnic girls, because for Mexicans, just having illegal immigrant parents is good enough for a Mexican boy. But I feel like the Mexican girls, they have to start work early and help take care of their younger siblings way too early. That makes them cool as fuck later on in life. And I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it. Little black boys, they need to not have a father. They need a fatherless. They don't need to have a not father the whole entire time, but they need a large portion of their childhood to be fatherless. That's very important. You look at all of our greatest champions, LeBron James, Shaquille O'Neal, all fatherless, right? And you're probably screaming at the top of your lungs at me, what about Michael Jordan and Kobe? Yes, they were both wildly successful. Each of them probably the GOATs. Michael Jordan, the GOAT. Kobe Bryant, my favorite basketball player ever. But not stable. Well documented that they were probably both basketball psychopaths. Both had fathers. And if you were told that both Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant had to sacrifice a human life to be as good as they were, you'd be like, oh, that makes sense. They would totally do that. Sometimes I personally feel that I didn't have enough of a fatherless period in my life. My dad, even though he didn't live with me, he was around. He lived in the same town. I could walk and see him pretty much my whole entire life. He always lived within walking distance. I would see my dad drive by sometimes on his way to the bar. It's not like I completely had a vacant father. I mean, he wasn't always there. I mean, I definitely grew up in a single parent household, but I did not grow up in a single parent town. I had one parent in my household, two parents in my town. Yes, I did have a fatherless home, but no, I did not have a fatherless neighborhood. That might have been just too much proximity to my father for me to be an uber high achiever. I'm stable, though. I'm stable. He was distant enough for me to be a stable guy. I'm just not overly obsessed with proving to my dad what he missed out on because he always saw it. He just constantly was driving by me playing and shit. I will say this though, black girls, they need a dad. Black girls for sure need a dad. Because for black girls that grow up without a dad, there's too much risk for them to become one of those black women that say to other men, "You ain't my daddy." And that is a tough life. Being a "you ain't my daddy" chick, that is a tough life. I guarantee you that woman cries herself to sleep almost every night. And that's because she didn't have it. You need, black girls need a dad. But as far as necessary ethnic trauma for black girls, I think they just need to be a little poor. I think they need to just come up in a financial situation that is a little struggly. And they'll be all right. They'll be very stable, hard workers. I think white kids need trauma too. I don't think white kids are exempt from needing trauma. I think they need like an alcoholic father. An alcoholic father or a drug addicted mother. You don't want to have a drug addicted father or an alcoholic mother for a white kid. They need alcoholic father, drug addicted mother. It's probably preferential for them to have the alcoholic father. I think that's what makes most successful white people. Oh, actually, you know what's really good for white kids? Divorce. Divorce is amazing for white kids. That makes white kids so good. Divorce really puts white kids on the right trajectory in life. I think the hardest is biracial kids. Any sort of brown mixed with white to make a biracial kid, that is for sure the hardest, because as a society, I don't think we know how to effectively traumatize them best. I don't think we have a consistent pattern of traumatization that makes for the best outcome for biracial kids. I have biracial children. I am always very honest with my son about how hard it is to raise a biracial kid. I'm constantly telling him, like, look, son, I don't know. I don't know if I should leave or stay. I don't know what to do, man. I don't know what's going to make you the best man. If I ever left my wife, it would only be because that's what's best for the kids. I don't want to leave, but if the science told me I had to, I'd have to trust the science. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunate, but I really love your mother and we get along. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing for you, man. I don't know. We got to figure this out together. We got to work together on this. That's actually ridiculous that I just said that, because we are actually working together on that. We worked together on that very recently. Man, this is crazy. So my son wants to be an athlete. He wants to do sports. He wants to excel at sports. And my son and I were talking very recently about what is the one thing that is most important to be able to excel at sports, right? And my answer to him was your perception of pain. How you deal with pain is the most important aspect as far as being someone who excels at sports. Because depending on how you view pain is going to determine how hard you can work. And it's going to determine how hard you push yourself. And it's going to determine how hard you compete when you're actually in competition. So the more you are a person that is adverse to pain, the less chance you'll have to be somebody who excels at sports. But again, on the other side of that coin, the more pain you're willing to accept, the more chance you have to excel at sports. And we were driving home from school when we were having this conversation. And after telling my son that, he thought about it and he goes, huh, I think I try to avoid pain too much. I have to figure out how to stop avoiding pain so much. So we started trying to workshop some of the lifestyle changes that he can make that would reduce his aversion to pain. So we started with comfort, right? Because pain is just discomfort magnified. So we started to think about all of the things that he does to live a very comfortable lifestyle. So one of the things that we settled on, this is so ridiculous. One of the things that we settled on is that he would no longer snuggle up on the couch with a blanket while he was watching TV or playing video games. It was too much comfort. You can't have that much comfort in your life as a little boy. I never did that, personally. Growing up, snuggling up on the couch, playing video games or watching TV, I never did that. I would sit on my couch in the most uncomfortable way possible. And listen, this might be some form of toxic masculinity, but growing up for me, the idea of doing anything to seek comfort while sitting on a couch seemed kind of soft, right? We used to make fun of people that would sit on a couch with a blanket. We call them blanket kids. It was considered very soft behavior by my peers. And when I say by my peers, I mean other kids who were also growing up semi-fatherless. So he did. He nipped the blanket sitting in the bud. Because we always have blankets in our living room. There's a basket in our living room with blankets. But they were never for me and him. They were always for my wife and daughters. Because it's very different when you have a boy with too much comfort and girls with adequate comfort, right? because I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound very simplistic, but I think I'm right about this. Little boys that have too much comfort, it makes them pain adverse, because now you're pulling them from a comfortable situation and you're trying to get them into an uncomfortable situation. But comfort is a much better choice in that situation. It's the opposite for girls, because if you have too much discomfort in daily life for a girl, then adding more to it by choice is a very unfavorable choice. And that makes girls now pain adverse. They're not going to choose to stack on more pain to achieve their goals. But if you have a very comfortable environment for a girl, she knows that after dealing with this pain that she's choosing to deal with, she can go back to her comfortable environment. So it's the opposite for girls. You need a very comfortable environment for girls so they can go back to a comfortable environment after dealing with pain, and you need a very uncomfortable environment for boys so that it's not a huge transition when they're choosing discomfort to achieve their goals. Now listen, I don't know if what I just said is psychologically true, right? Like, I don't have the qualifications to make that determination, but what I do know is my son has stopped the blanketing for I think about a week or so now, and he is attacking his exercise and his training with a ferocity that I have never seen him attack it with. So very anecdotally, I'm right. And to be quite honest with you, I think I'm the only person doing this type of biracial research. Man, all this talk about how to make a stable and successful ethnic kid is making me think about Michael Jackson. And I think it proves me right. Because Michael Jackson did have an overbearing father in his life. So he had a father and a mother in his life. However, even though he did become massively successful, not stable. We're talking about stable and successful. Michael Jackson proves that an overbearing black father makes a boy successful, but not stable. Man, speaking of Michael Jackson, so I send Ansley a lot of videos on Instagram and stuff, and it's overwhelming. I sent her an overwhelming amount of videos. There's no way she can watch all the videos in one sitting. So a lot of times what she does is on the weekend, she'll mirror her phone on the TV, and she'll watch all the videos that I send her with the kids, right? So the other day I sent her this video of Michael Jackson kind of age progressing throughout the years. It progressed him through time from the early 70s until he passed away. So it basically went from Jackson 5 to not alive. And my kids watched that with us. And my kids had no idea that Michael Jackson was black. I got to watch my kids have their minds blown to find out that Michael Jackson was black. Because at first, my son was like, Michael Jackson had an afro? Wait a second, Michael Jackson was black? That is a wild thing to have to explain to a kid for the first time. Like, it was easy for us to kind of understand because we grew up with it, but it was very funny to watch a kid have to process in 2024 that a man turned himself white, a black man achieved so much money and power that he turned himself white. Listen, people get upset with OJ because OJ said, I ain't black, I'm OJ. But Michael Jackson might not have said, I'm not black, I'm Michael Jackson, but he definitely lived it. He did things that black people would never. He had a pet monkey. How ridiculous is that? He had a monkey on a leash. That is insane. You don't know any black man that has ever had a monkey on a leash walking around. That's wild. And he dressed him up. He dressed his little monkey up in human clothes. Could you imagine seeing a black man walking around with a monkey in clothes on a leash? You would have to freeze your brain from having inappropriate racist thoughts. I don't care what color you are. You would have to manually seize your brain and stop it from all of the ridiculous thoughts that it was going to have. You might have a stroke. You might just die from it. Like, if black men start walking around with monkeys on leashes, so many people might die from that, that it would get ranked as one of the leading causes of death in America. Like, obesity, heart failure, car crashes, seeing black men walk monkeys on leashes. It would be the fourth leading cause of death in America. Because just the idea of monkeys are very sensitive in the black community. This is a true story. When I was a kid, my mom told me very specifically that I wasn't allowed to act like a monkey in front of white people. That is an actual and real thing that my mom told me when I was a little kid. And she told it to me because I loved the Curious George cartoon when I was a little kid. It was one of my favorite cartoons. And I loved it so much that my mom was concerned that I was going to be acting like a monkey in front of white people. Which is kind of crazy if you think about it, because Curious George was adopted by a white man in the yellow hat. And Curious George was so racially sensitive that he didn't even act like a monkey in front of white people. Curious George almost never acted like a monkey. He was acting like a little boy the whole entire time. He was Curious George. But it actually came to fruition. One time I was in elementary school and we were doing these animal cards. They were like flash cards. So, and it was going in order of how we were seated. So a person would stand up and the teacher would take out one of the cards and it would be an animal. And then the kid would make a sound like that animal or do a gesture like that animal. And I shit you not, when it came to me, the card was a monkey. And I had to say to a teacher, to an adult education provider, I had to say, my mom said I can't act like a monkey in front of white people. This was like first grade. And she was like, whoop, we're done with this game. Everybody's learning multiplication now. We're doing flashcards now. We were the most advanced math class in first grade because I ended the animal game. We only did math from that point on. We were the only first grade class doing long division. Yet, Michael Jackson had a pet monkey. Think about that. Think about that. Oh man, this is funny. And this might also be influenced by me thinking about Michael Jackson right now. But the other day, my wife had my daughters out. I wasn't there, right? But my wife had my daughters out. And they saw this old man with these two little dogs. My daughters love dogs. All of my kids, they love dogs. So every time they see a dog, they have to go up and pet them. And they know all the rigmarole. Like, they have to ask the owner if it's safe to pet the dog. So they start running over to this old man with his dogs. And the old man saw my daughters running over to the dogs. And they were with a friend. They were multiple little girlfriends, right? And all these little girls start running over to ask this old man to pet his dogs. And he sees these girls running at him. And he looks up at him and he yells, "Scram!" Which is insane because it stopped them in their tracks. That was probably the first time any of them had heard the word scram, but they knew exactly what it meant. They scrammed. This old man told them to scram, and they scrammed immediately. And honestly, I think the old man did the right thing. Those weren't his grandkids. He can't be around these kids that ain't his grandkids or relatives and have people accuse him of something weird. Nah, scram, kids. Get the hell out of here. I don't need that smoke. I'm just trying to walk around with my dogs, pick up their shit, and go home. I don't need to catch a case out here. Because my daughters accused him of being a mean old man, and I had to explain to my daughters, he ain't mean. He's doing the right thing. He made it this far in life. He's got to protect himself at all times. He's got to intelligently defend himself at all times. He's in a fight for life at this point. He's trying to manage the quality of his life after making it this far. I'll put it to you this way. This man was so old that he was using the word scram. I mean, that word is so old that I had to look it up to explain to my kids what it meant. Also, if you didn't know this, scram, the etymology of the word, is that the right word? The etymology of the word is either from, they're not sure, it's either from the word scramble or the German word scram, which means to get out of here. I think it's from the German word scram. I think it's probably more German than it is from scramble, but I'm not an expert in that department. But I really feel in my heart that that man 100% did the right thing. And I am going to remember that for the rest of my life. I am definitely going to be telling kids to scram in my elderly age. Man, this is going to be a semi-switch of subjects, but I just saw something recently claiming that there was an epidemic, that we were living in an era where there was an epidemic of female teachers banging students. And I don't even know if that's true. I don't know if we're living in a time where female teachers bang their students more now, or if people just get caught more now. I think all the time before this era, dudes would bang their teachers and they would just keep quiet about it and let that internalize and make them become men. But now we're living in this era where the issue isn't that female teachers bang their students more now. The issue is that we have group chats now and people have to tell people now. They can't just keep it to themselves. I mean, they're not going to put it on their social media, of course. They know that's wrong. But the group chat, they got to let their fellas know. There was a movie about it when I was young, Mrs. Jones. I think it was called Mrs. Jones. So it's not like it didn't happen. It definitely happened, and it was definitely part of the zeitgeist. But what was also part of the zeitgeist is that a young man would bang his teacher, and like I said, he would internalize that. It would make him a captain of industry. And it's almost the other way now, where if you bang your female teacher and you don't tell your homies in the group chat, you were sexually assaulted. If you bang a female teacher now and you keep it a secret, that is trauma. Oh, man. We live in such an over-sexualized society that if you don't share your sexual exploits, that's a problem. You need therapy. If you don't share it, you need therapy. Man, things have changed so much. Like, I remember when I was a kid, you had to discover porn. You had to find porn in the woods. And I know this is a well-worn topic now, but it's ridiculous how porn is now. Like, porn finds you now. You almost have to hide from porn. I have to make an effort to not look at porn on Twitter. It is wild. Like, I'll see a funny post. I'll click on it to read the comments. Three comments down, I'm looking at porn. I'm not even trying to. Porn is finding me. And the funniest part about it is that now we have porn specialists because of OnlyFans. So OnlyFans is basically capitalizing off of the fetishes of men. So now you have people that specialize in doing one thing porn-wise. So you have a woman that only shows tits, or a woman that will only, when I say only shows tits, I mean nothing from the neck up, nothing from the middle of the chest down. They only show tits. You have ass specialists. You have vag specialists. I mean, there's the foot thing, but I don't even consider that foot thing porn. That's just weird. If you're jerking off the feet, you're a weirdo. And I'm not saying that's a problem. I support anybody coming the way they need to come. If you have to come a certain way and you found the way that you have to come and it's legal and consensual, I support. But if you come to feet, that's just weird. And I'm not saying I don't come to anything weird. I like bodybuilder women. Like, if I look at porn sometimes, I seek naked bodybuilder women. That's weird. Some people find that weird. I know a lot of the foot guys find that weird. And I don't even seek porn out that much. But every now and again, like a couple times a year, I'll seek out some porn. I'll look up some bodybuilder women. Not, when I say not too jacked, I mean like overly big women. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a woman who's basically just jacked enough where I can imagine that my grip on my penis is her grip. I like to jerk off the women with a good strong grip. All right, man. I think that's enough for this week's episode of Break the World. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you had a good time. Look forward to more episodes coming out. And like I said, subscribe, rate and review wherever you're listening to this, preferably iTunes and Spotify. And we'll catch you back next week. Thank you so much, man. I'm out.